everyone. Welcome to... I just forgot the name of the show. The show is called Films Like the First Time.
Wow.
Got him.
Yep, and I'm Nick.
I'm Amanda.
And I'm Dave.
And this week we're watching a movie chosen by Amanda.
Yep.
Well, this week. It's been like a month and a half since we've recorded. We're watching Heathers.
We already watched Heathers.
Yeah, I don't know why I put that in the present tense.
Mm.
A 1988 or 89 movie, depending on where you look.
89.
Because IMDb says 88 for some reason.
That's wrong.
Yeah, apparently. There's a lot wrong. But, yeah, end of the 80s, teen dark comedy?
Yeah.
Starring...
It's like the first teen dark comedy.
Starring Winona Ryder, Christian Slater, Shannon Doherty, R.I.P.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, because it's an 80s teen movie, there is an Estevez in the movie as well.
Which Estevez?
Betty is an Estevez. She's Martin Sheen's daughter.
Who's
Betty?
Old best friend, the one with the glasses.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
One of the only people you feel for in this fucking movie.
Well, everybody...
Who is she again?
Everybody that Veronica, like, used to hang out with, and then all the Heathers want to be mean to,
people. Oh, Estevez.
Estevez.
Yeah. She's whose daughter?
Martin Sheen's daughter. She's the sister of Emilio and Charlie.
Now I feel like there should have been a whole other dynamic, like a Men at Work sequel.
With her in it?
Yeah.
And Martin in it?
Yeah, if you can find Martin. He might be in the jungle somewhere.
Having another heart attack?
Yeah.
Jeez. I hope not. He's a little too old for that at this point.
A lot of people getting too old for this shit.
Including Danny Glover, who's still getting too old for this shit.
Yep.
But it is kind of amazing how Estevezian the 80s were in teen movies.
What's funny is when you said Estevez, I would have thought for sure it was that one football player with the big chin.
One of them met his end.
Yeah.
Later.
Oh,
with the dark hair and the bright blue eyes.
The big bug eyes.
Yeah, big blue eyes with that dark hair.
Yeah.
Terrible person as far as a character.
And full on Leno chin.
Yep.
Full on Leno chin. Okay.
I've been vamping this entire time just trying to find my notes.
Well, that's okay because I've got my notes because I was the one who had not seen this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I had apparently not seen it in longer than I thought.
Fair enough.
I hadn't seen it in quite a while. I remembered all of the major plot points. I didn't remember a lot of the, like, minutiae, and I really didn't remember how much is in it that, you know, would give Gen Zers a fucking aneurysm.
I mean, I would say there are things in this movie that go beyond the word problematic.
Yes.
Yeah.
And because I laughed at them then, I feel okay that I laughed at them now.
I don't remember laughing at them then.
Well, because I saw them, I may have laughed not even knowing why I laughed.
I also saw this probably in my mid to late 20s. I didn't see it in the 80s.
So, I will say that the one thing that was within the problematic stuff that I did laugh at was the idea that mineral water makes you gay.
That felt like a Kids in the Hall joke.
Yeah, it did a little bit, yeah.
Especially, like, in the execution, too, because it's not really like any of the other jokes. Or maybe it's like a John Waters joke, really.
I mean, definitely in the 80s, most people weren't drinking mineral water. Like, true. I don't even remember mineral water until, like, the early 90s with, like, Clearly Canadian, so.
It was there, but
yeah. Clearly Canadian, obviously, though, had flavor.
Yes.
That was the difference.
Clearly Canadian is still around, guys.
Oh, no, it came back. Minis. It went away. Yeah. And then...
it brought it back.
Some would say it never went away. It just took a break.
Like the whatchamacallit?
Anyway, the movie opens with a lovely lawn party with the Heathers chatting up and then walking across the flowers. Not over the flowers. They walk through the flowers, stomping on them to go play croquet. And my first thought is, holy shit, they're fucking playing actual croquet. What is this?
An excuse to wear knee socks.
Fair enough. And then they're like, oh, Heather. Oh, no, sorry. Heather, you're up. No, I'm like, okay, so they're all named Heather. Got it. Title of the movie's Heathers. Figured that out.
Yes.
Thank you.
There you go.
And then my next thought is, why is Winona Ryder's head in the ground, coming out of the ground? Is this a weird, like, sci-fi dream thing going on? And honestly, that vibe held through 95% of this movie.
So that scene, and there were just a couple other little things that I was like, this is very much in her imagination. Because they cut from that to her writing in her diary very furiously and large, like a kid with a crayon. It was so strange.
If you didn't know better, you would have thought that scene came from some Tim Burton movie with her in it that you've never seen somehow.
Well, what's weird is that, speaking of Tim Burton, obviously Beetlejuice came out in 88. This is 89. They're like less than a year apart in release. And
Otho was in both of them.
Yes.
Yeah.
But here's my question about the diary writing. Why does she wear a monocle?
I didn't notice a monocle until like the third or fourth time she got the diary out, and she's like doing something. Like, what is she? She's wearing a monocle.
Well, you see, the writer of Heathers would go on to write, I believe, Batman Returns.
Oh, he's written some real stinkers. I looked it up.
And so I think this was him trying out the monocle ahead of time for the Penguin.
Maybe thinking, hey, I'm going to write a Batman movie later.
He's like, maybe I can get a Winona Ryder.
As the Penguin.
Yeah. What a weird career trajectory that could have been.
So, We learn the dynamic of the Heathers pretty quickly. I don't remember the last names. I just know them by color. Red Heather is definitely the leader. Yellow Heather is the dumb but go along one. And Green Heather is the smarter one who might actually be a little bit sensitive at times. At least it seemed like that during the beginning, the first part, half of the movie.
Yeah. Heather Chandler is the ringleader.
Which one's Shannon Doherty?
Green. She's Green Heather.
Okay.
That wants to be Red Heather, but can't be, because Red Heather is Red Heather.
Well, she's the one that gets picked on the most.
Yes. And she's also the bulimic one.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, that right off the bat there, the bulimia joke. Have you ever known who a character is so quickly from just one line?
I mean, I think all of these characters, you understand who they are immediately because...
They're pretty archetypal.
They're painted with a very broad brush.
They are pretty much like the full...
They're stereotypes.
Yeah.
Also, we talked about this a little bit before Dave got here, but yeah, this movie was very much written before trigger warnings existed, because they're all in here.
Yes, and to be fair, we should mention, as you're listening, if you have seen this movie, which I'm assuming you have, then you know that a lot of the topics throughout this movie are going to revolve around suicide, if that's something that... is upsetting to you, I understand.
Suicide, SA, eating disorders, yeah. Bullying.
Yeah, it hits all of them, guys. It's just it's a trigger machine, this movie.
But it's a comedy.
Yeah. So, we cut to school, and Red Heather is very clearly looking for Veronica. She needs to talk to Veronica in the calf. And when we finally get to Veronica, she literally just wants her so that she can forge a note for a prank. And I'm like, that was this vitally important thing that you needed her for.
And well, this is also high school and Mean Girls.
This is like the most arch mean thing. Like, they don't ease you into it. It's like, oh no, we're going to be pieces of shit immediately.
Pretty much.
Well, yeah. And that you find out that ringleader Heather, the reason there, everyone's in her group for a purpose. Mm-hmm. and everyone does her bidding so she can always be that one step away. She's like a godfather. She doesn't have she doesn't get her own, you know, doesn't get blood on her own hands. But what really gets her off is what she can get people to do.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she's, yeah. But that's, I think, part of one of my larger issues with this is that everyone, with the exception of Christian Slater, as we see in the development of this first major scene, is so, like, just brainwashed into, it's Heather. You have to follow along with Heather, because she is the pinnacle. She's the top. You can't, doesn't matter what group you're part of, if Heather says something, that's it. That's the thing.
I mean, that's very archetypical of Mean Girl movies.
Yes.
Mean Girls did that, too, to an extent.
But
Regina George wasn't nearly as horrible as Heather, but still, it was like everybody worshipped her and did everything that she said, and she was the leader, and that's what it was.
But so, yeah, the first thing we get her to...
Well, if Regina George existed in 1988 or 89, she would be Heather.
Probably closer to it. People were meaner back then.
They were.
They just were.
Ah, just back in the days. Why can't we just have simpler times like
that? Well, it's funny because...
Look, I miss the 90s, okay? You know,
what's, fair enough. What's funny, though, is that those same kids who were meaner back then are now the adults who are even meaner.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're those weird, mean adults where I'm like, you're 50. Why are you like this?
Because they're living in their teenage years.
They peaked in high school.
Shout out to MTG, everybody.
Oh.
So they decided to pick on poor Martha Dump Truck.
Oh, that's a totally be MTG's new nickname.
Oh, God. But that's the other character in this movie that I actually have, I feel for.
No, Martha.
Betty and Martha Dump Truck are the two redeemable people in this movie.
I look, is there anybody more, I don't know, of stronger constitution than Martha Dump Truck to have the confidence to leave the house with a white t-shirt that says Big Fun on it?
Well, we find out later that Big Fun is a band.
Yes.
Which, I'm like, this is not a real band.
At first I thought, wait, is that band that was on the Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure song? Oh, no, that was Big Pig.
And other people were wearing Big Fun shirts throughout the movie, too.
Yes.
But poor Martha. But
you don't know that then. You're just thinking like it's...
Just what you get.
like, damn, that's confidence. I would have loved
if she actually had that confidence. Like, she's like, yeah, I'm Big Fun. Martha Dump Truck right here. Hell yeah.
I mean, I absolutely know some women like that now that would 100% wear that. I'm Big Fun.
Big Fun.
Yep.
Yeah.
And now I know my Halloween costume this year, by the way.
Hey.
Fair enough. So we get this kind of vignette of all the characters, all the trope groups. We get the nerds and the jocks who are super jockey. And then, like, the stoner. And all of it's through this poll that Heather wants to do of, if you got $5 million the same day as aliens invaded the Earth, what would you do? And 90% of the people ignored the alien part of the question. Mm-hmm. Which was interesting.
I feel like 90% of people now would ignore the alien part of the question and just be like, oh, I'd actually be able to buy a house.
And then the one guy goes, oh, I'd go to the zoo and get a lion and put a remote control bomb up its butt. And I'm like, what? Well,
I know people like that.
The correct answer is, of course, if the world is ending in 2 days, money has no value.
Right.
Obviously. Of course.
So.
But nobody answers that. We get the finally get the introduction of
and the other part of that is I don't think Heather herself knows that that's the answer.
Oh no, there's no way Heather knows that's the answer.
She just thinks it's a stupid question.
She'd probably just be like, oh, you just pay off the aliens
or something.
Yeah. So we finally get to meet Christian Slater after he's been like stink eyeing Veronica for 15 minutes now. And we find out his name is Jason Dean. He's got two first names. How mysterious. Also, now that I think about it, it's a riff on James Dean.
Duh.
Yeah.
Full on rebel without a cause.
And without shit. Any cause.
And no. Did you notice he wasn't just eyeballing Veronica? He was watching the chain of custody of that note.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So he knew what was coming
before. Oh, yeah. He
He's probably seen this 1,000 times at however many schools he's going to.
And then
to.
We get this moment where the two jocks decide to try to pick on Christian Slater. And they're like, let's kick his ass. Man, he pulls out a gun.
Two.
I thought it was just one gun.
I'm pretty sure he has two.
No, I'm pretty sure it was just one.
It was a freaking Dirty Harry special is what it was. Freaking massive looking thing because it shot it down the barrel.
Yeah, I was gonna say that was.
And I'm like, what? And once again, I'm like, is this a dream? What is happening?
No, it's the time. You could like.
That's you weren't allowed to bring guns to school in the 80s.
No, but that's like I guess that's where the satire is. This is like completely beyond the realm of possibility, especially of what the consequences are, which are
none.
They discuss the consequences of the next scene during okay. It's like, yeah, he'll probably get suspended. He won't get expelled. He was shooting blanks. It's fine.
It's no big deal.
But I don't feel like, because again, I watched this for the first time when I was maybe 13.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking, plausible.
See, now this is part of my theory about this movie, is that I think you have to be under the age of 18 when you first watch this movie to really like be like, oh yeah. Because
okay.
As a 40-something-year-old...
No, there's probably a lot of cases of that.
Yeah, sure.
I can't
like say, Last Unicorn.
I was going to say, I can't say that if somehow I didn't see that when I was much younger, that I wouldn't have liked it more. Fair enough. Liked a lot worse music back then.
No, that's fair. I mean, I totally agree. And there are
and things some that of I... it I've taken with me.
Yeah. It happens. I understand that. And so, like, I can't blame people for liking this when it came out if they were of a young enough age. But there are things that drive me crazy about this movie as a
full-grown adult. It doesn't really hold up that well now.
So we get this scene, the second croquet scene now, where they're talking about, oh, he'll be fine. He's not going to get expelled. Red Heather knocks Green Heather's croquet ball into the bushes, and then... freaking Green Heather with a shot of a lifetime hits the wicket. I don't know. I'm not a croquet expert. And then we find out that this whole croquet thing is happening at Veronica's place.
Yep.
Of all places. So here's...
Her and her parents are always just having pâté.
Pâté, yeah.
But they say it pâté.
Here's my issue. and this might be... because I appreciate that they're trying to do satire here. This is one of the issues I have with a lot of 1980s movies, with the exception of, like, The Karate Kid. Almost all teenage protagonists in the 80s come from privilege.
Yeah.
Well, and John Hughes movies.
Yeah, we had this discussion when we watched Uncle Buck.
Yeah.
About the privilege
Bret Easton Ellis doesn't know how to write unprivileged.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, like... it's such a weird lens living in the 2020s and looking at a time when and they didn't even think about
it. Well, and hero stories were movies like Secret of My Success, mm-hmm. were about climbing the corporate ladder.
Well, yeah, it's the whole Horatio Alger story kind of thing, yeah. But it's just an interesting thing to look back at. And like I said, with the exception of like a Daniel LaRusso, who was the scrappy kid who moved halfway across the country and got bullied by the rich kids.
Mm-hmm.
Like, most of these stories, even, like, Ferris Bueller's loaded.
Yeah.
All right, there's the one John Hughes.
John Bender.
Well, no, but you can't really say because he's got Molly Ringwald's character in that.
Yeah, John Hughes, 16 Candles, Molly Ringwald was not rich.
Right, but, that's the one, yeah. That's the one where you can say, like, this was not told through.
Yeah,
the,
fair enough.
Or I guess Some Kind of Wonderful, which is essentially the same movie, but not as good.
But also, yeah, I mean, even we get into later, he was like, Uncle Buck, the kids are all a privilege, even if Buck isn't. Mm-hmm. And
and the goof of it is... oh, look at this oaf who doesn't have a butler and whatnot.
He's got a hatchet in his car.
Oh, look how he doesn't know to live in the civilized world.
He just has all that common sense.
Right. Common sense. The word common is in it. No, thank you.
We demand uncommon sense.
Well, I mean, I guess them being of such privilege, like they're the rich kids, kind of lends itself to... what I was going to bring up like 10 minutes ago.
Sorry.
Their nonchalance towards all of this.
Uh-huh. But they're all the rich kids in this movie.
But I just
Even Christian Slater's a rich kid.
I know, but their nonchalance towards everything that is happening. Like all of the SA, all of the
yeah.
the bullying, all of the bringing a gun to school. Nothing's going to happen to him. It was blanks. Who cares?
It's either like complete denial or utter desensitization.
Yeah.
Desensitization.
There you go.
So, yeah, we get that. And then we get Heather and Veronica stopping at a convenience store. And Heather very much being like, corn nuts! I'm like, corn nuts? Of all the snacks that she could be obsessed with, it's corn nuts.
Spicy or barbecue?
I think probably ranch for her.
Well, no, ugh. She said, I think she wanted barbecue. She is barbecue, the worst.
Oh, fair enough.
Corn nuts are gross anyway.
Actually don't mind corn nuts.
I'd rather have Gardettos, and I don't even want Gardettos.
I don't even know if Gardettos existed in 1989.
I don't think they did. I think they came out in like mid-90s.
Not together. Yeah. You would have to assemble yourself. Yeah. Yeah.
The closest would be a homemade Chex Mix. Yeah. But corn nuts. And then, of course, Christian Slater's there. And this is when I had put the note, and I told you this before we started recording. I'm like, I had the question of, is Christian Slater always cold? Not only is he wearing the big trench coat, but he keeps his hands in the coat 90% of the time.
Well, to be fair, later in the woods, when he's standing on that hill, you see his breath.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm pretty sure it was cold at night.
Fair enough, but it's so funny.
This is supposed to be California, no?
Ohio.
Oh, Ohio.
Yeah, they're in Ohio.
Okay, well.
They're all a bunch of rich kids in Ohio.
All right, well, I don't know how cold it could get. Look, this is 80s global warming.
Yeah.
So it could have been downright nippy.
I mean, I don't know what time of year it is either. Like,
they were all wearing...
in session, so it definitely can get cold at night.
Yeah.
It's not summer.
Yeah, it looked kind of frosty in the woods some nights.
Fair enough. He was inside of the convenience store, and every time we see him, he had his hands in his pockets. It wasn't like a one-time
thing. I think that's just some sort of mystery.
Sure.
What could he be doing with those hands?
Yeah, cool. Yeah, it's an affectation he decided to take on for the role. Whatever. Also, shoulder pads in this movie are wild.
So many shoulder pads.
The other thing he liked to do was light up.
And that's true.
Since he was inside, he couldn't, so...
Yeah. We're going to get to him later because there was a moment that killed me.
As much as shoulder pads were a thing in the 80s, they were over-exaggerated in this.
I feel like this was like towards the end of it.
I mean, they were almost like talking heads level shoulder pads.
Well, I think maybe that's just another thing, like just some random thing they wanted to accentuate in this satire. Guess.
So we get the scene with them in the convenience store. It's fairly short.
Like everybody's overcompensating.
But the one thing that stuck with me is Winona Ryder tells him, Veronica tells him, I don't really like my friends. And my first thought is, well, then they're not your friends. But that's not what the conversation is.
This is also a huge trope and something that a lot of kids go through in high school
where it's like.
I care so much about what other people think. I want to be popular.
Yep.
I don't actually like these people, but like I want to be liked.
100%. I mean, it's the one girl in the oblongs. Like she wants to be a Debbie.
Yep.
Even though she'll never be a Debbie.
I want to be a Debbie.
Yeah. So then we get,
yikes.
Oblongs is a great cartoon.
We get Red, Heather, and Veronica going to this frat party, and the introduction of, hello ladies, throw your coats on the floor, is maybe the most ridiculous thing of all time. and her going back and forth here, with her diaries when I first noticed the monocle.
Okay.
I'm like, why is she wearing a monocle? Also, these guys are just awful. Like, the guy that Veronica's talking to goes, oh yeah, I hate it when I have to ask a girl what her major is. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
So you just like them young. Okay, good to know. Or you don't care about women being educated. One of the two.
No, there's another option.
I don't want them to talk to me.
I don't want to have to think of a reason to care.
Well, I mean, this is also at least that I noticed, the first coercion essay in the movie.
Oh my God.
Because clearly Red Veronica did not want to.
Red Heather.
Red Heather, sorry. Red Heather was not
Red
interested.
Red Heather, Yellow Heather.
Yes.
Red Leather Heather.
Red Yellow Heather, Heather, Yellow Heather.
Damn it. Now that's going to be stuck in my head forever.
Was not keen on... You know, given the blowjob, obviously, as you see later, because she's disgustedly washing out her mouth in the bathroom.
Did you notice also that when she went down on him, it panned up to the Max-L poster?
Is that the Energizer?
The one where he sits down in the armchair and gets blown away.
Yeah, I did.
And I was like, well, that's
I
nice
feel like
placement.
I'm missing tons of my notes because I thought I'm like, oh, I should have mentioned this.
Were you high when you watched this, Dave?
Yes.
Well, that's probably
also,
what happened.
You watched it a while back because...
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know.
And then Heather, like...
Oh, also, sorry.
Veronica sets a fire, randomly.
Yeah, but it doesn't burn anything down, so it's kind of innocuous.
Was Veronica not... Was she roofied?
No, but it almost feels like she was.
Right? Because, like, she at one point, didn't she just sort of... she's throwing up in the alley.
She said she
was
feeling sick.
Yeah, and that was the first... I mean, again, it has been a while.
Because, yeah, the college dude comes in and, like, basically tells her, hey, babe, like, let's fuck.
Yep.
And she's like, ew, no thank you, and luckily just leaves, but that's after she sets a fire, which we see...
Then we see it in the garbage can and she walks away.
Yeah,
later.
It really has nothing to do with anything, so I'm not totally
it's
sure.
It's just a random fire.
What that was about, but
was
then,
it,
yeah.
Wait,
then
how did she start the fire?
She threw out a cigarette, was it?
She grabbed a mug that had some paper or something
in it. That's right.
She
threw her cigarette in it,
and then whatever was in the mug caught fire.
And then she threw
that
out.
And then she panicked and just threw it out the window.
And it landed in a garbage can full of newspapers.
Which I thought the frat house was going to burn down or
something.
Me too. But there were zero consequences.
Zero consequence.
To any of that. Except, yes, later she was throwing up. So.
I'd love to know if that was in the original script. And the discussion to, why did we keep this, if it was?
Because then we can see the cool shot of her walking by a flaming garbage can.
I mean, maybe it was supposed to symbolize what a dumpster fire that... party was? I don't know.
I feel like that was a lot of effort to get there.
Yes, it was. It was too much effort to get there because it felt unnatural.
But yes, she was getting sick a lot later, so I wondered the same thing too.
Wondered that before watching. There was a lot of stuff where it seemed kind of obvious now that it makes me wonder how old was I the last time I watched it.
So
because I have a Blu-ray. I must have watched it once
as
before.
An adult.
So we get, Veronica's about to throw up.
But then again, sometimes I don't watch them for a long time.
Veronica's about to throw up and Heather's like, what do you mean you want to leave? She's like, I'm literally ill. We need to leave. And Heather's like, you're being such a coos.
Very.
I'm like, oh. And then she like goes into like this tirade of what she thinks are insults to Veronica. And they're all just like things that, you know, normal, decent people are.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, wow, that's great. Oh, and then she goes home, and she runs into Christian Slater, and they decide to have a croquet match. And I'm like, oh, so that's what they mean by croquet match. Because you just see, like, croquet balls and underwear strewn all about.
Well, up until she and Christian Slater actually get together, I felt like they were trying to, and then they just totally threw it away, but they were trying to set it up, that stereotype, like, because the Heathers wanted to bully Martha, and like Veronica apologizes to Betty, like, sorry I missed your party last month, because like they had been friends.
Mm-hmm.
And like, these people are so much nicer, I don't really want to write this note, I don't have anything against Martha. And Christian Slater is watching all this happen, like, oh, she's not like those other bitches.
Yeah.
Like, I like her. And you're kind of thinking that, okay, maybe they're gonna get together and Veronica's gonna like turn her back on the Heathers, which she does, but
not in the way
you expect.
I will also say that, and I'm saying this in the narrative sense, it takes a little bit away of Veronica, you know, very clearly going, I'm not fucking this guy, this dude out of nowhere. By having her immediately hook up with Christian Slater's character. Not because I don't think that's okay as a human being to go, this person I'm actually attracted to, I'm willing to have sex with them.
Well,
but it just takes a little bit off of that other scene, I think.
Yeah, but her and Christian Slater have been having moments throughout the whole movie this far.
They've had two moments.
Yes.
Fair enough.
Well, I think it just a further reinforcement of how repulsive she found the college guy.
Those guys were pretty repulsive.
They were very repulsive, actually.
And then by proxy makes Heather look even shittier.
So yeah, then the next morning they go to Heather's place, and at first it seems like Christian Slater's joking around about, like, let's just put drain cleaner in her drink, and she's like, oh no, let's just mix orange juice and milk or spit in the stuff. Or whatever, and then she accidentally takes the cup of drain cleaner, and Christian Slater's like, oh, I'll give it to her. And you're just like, holy fuck, they're actually going to murder Heather here. And then they do. And Red Heather's last words were, corn nuts. I was like, what the fuck? It was also a weird exchange because she's like, oh, no, you did something to my drink. I'm not drinking it. And he's like, what are you, chicken? She goes, you think that's going to work for me? I don't care if you call me a chicken. Give me the drink.
Yeah, exactly. It clearly did work on her.
Yeah.
But also, this is the first... Veronica seems like the smartest one up till this point. When it's pretty obvious what Christian Slater is doing and she just sort of chooses to not notice and then acts surprised.
She kind of just becomes like season one, first few episodes, Joyce Byers at this point.
What?
You know? And she's just like, I just killed my best friend. She's not your best friend. Yes, you just murdered somebody.
You sure she didn't go full, what's her, Susanna Kaysen from Girl Interrupted?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, man.
I remembered all of that.
Good job.
And I literally wrote this note, and I think this is maybe the most accurate note I've written for any movie at this point. I wrote, this is like Invasive Thoughts the movie.
Intrusive thoughts, but
intrusive.
Yes.
Thank you. I got. I knew.
Well,
I
didn't get either reference. So.
Intrusive thoughts, the movie, because intrusive thoughts. You know, things like, oh,
what if I just
turn my car through the median? And
yeah.
Drive into traffic and stuff like that.
What if, like, I stick my hand in the garbage disposal? Like, yeah.
And then they show, and this is something that bothers me in movies sometimes. Is they made it very obvious what they were, what the next step was. They showed Christian Slater look over, and we see a copy of the Bell Jar. And I'm like, ah, oh, they're just going to stage this as a suicide. Immediately. And I'm like, and then, of course, that's what they did. And it just feels like Christian Slater's done this before.
Uh-huh. Oh, he definitely has.
Like, he just has the answer too easily. So, yeah, they write the forged suicide note, including the conversation of, oh, she didn't know what that was in the vocabulary test last week. And he's like, well, that just makes it better because now she's going to use it now because she wants to prove that she does know what it means and blah, blah, blah. And then we get the teachers in the teacher's office discussing her death. And fuck them. And what's sad is at one point, the hippie teacher, the one wearing the purple, it feels like she's like onto it. Like she's like, no, a child died. We need to. And then she's like sharing the suicide note with her class. And
yeah.
I'm like, okay. Well, fuck all of them. Also, the reactions of the other Heathers to the death. I love the fact that Green Heather was just eating chicken. Like, nothing changed. Just like, bah, bah, bah. And I understand she's bulimic and it was a joke on that as well. But even if she didn't have an eating disorder, the fact that she was just sitting there in the locker room eating a chicken leg while people were discussing her friend's death is wild.
Well, also... could be that she now thinks it's okay that she can eat that chicken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it felt freeing.
I mean, it was, I've had people pass away or tragically where I'm just like, huh.
Yeah.
Anyway. And like felt really weird that I didn't feel more, but.
Right.
Pass me a turkey leg.
Right.
Yeah. And we also got, oh, you want her swatch? She's not going to have it. I'm like, a swatch watch. Wow.
But this also adds to, again, like the nonchalance of. Like, Veronica's nonchalance of, holy crap, we just murdered someone. Oh, sure, I'll write a note. It'll be fine. Eh. And then everybody else's sort of reaction to it is like, huh, weird.
Well, and it's not just everyone as in just the main characters. Everyone as in the entire school. And that's one of my issues with this movie as a whole. And I understand that it's done... trying to be done through the veil of I just lost the word, satire. But the lack of humanity in this movie as a whole really bothers me.
You know, it's sort of like Monty Python, but you took away the playfulness.
Yes.
Yeah, there's this... This is supposed to be a dark comedy, but there's not a lot of comedy. It's mostly just dark, and everyone is a bad person.
It's yeah. But like, I guess the thought that it's like Monty Python is that it's... Without the whimsy, it's just absurd.
Yeah.
And you're... That, how could people...
Yeah.
Because if you're not even doing it through like a funnier lens, like it, or somebody's acting really goofily.
I will say, one of my favorite lines in this movie was, and I don't remember the guy's name. I don't think it was Chad, but I think his name was something like Chad. When they're in class talking about the suicide, and he's like, "Oh yeah, I dated her, and she broke up with me." And he goes, "She said I was boring. Turns out I wasn't. She was just dissatisfied with her life." I'm like, "Nope, you're so boring."
Oh, oh man. But of course, everyone capitalized on the tragedy, and suddenly she was their best friend, and which 100% happens. I've watched it happen every time I've had someone close to me pass away.
Did Heather just run from TV station to TV station thing was great. I actually appreciated that. And then we meet Papa Dean, who's a real piece of shit, just like his son. And there's this line when they're talking about the last time I saw my mother, she was waving from a library window in Texas.
Yeah, and she was.
And we find out later what happened, but when he said that, I'm like, what is this, a fucking JFK reference? Like, is this a book depository?
It's a library, not a book depository.
I'm like, is somehow his mother Lee Harvey
Never
Oswald?
Mind the idea.
That's believable.
Never mind that a library does, in fact, is it, well, it's a repository.
Well, to be fair, pretty soon there won't be any libraries in Texas, so that...
No.
Well, that's all right. Most of them can't read anyhow.
And then we get the cameo of all cameos. And that is Reverend Otho.
Reverend Otho. I don't even know what that actor's real name is. Nope. He's only Otho to me.
Yeah. I don't think I've seen him in
anything. I feel like I should have written it down.
His name?
I've seen him in a handful of other things from this era. He's always got a small part, but he's always just been Otho to me. So.
I feel like I've definitely seen him in like some random sitcoms or something.
Oh, probably. But yeah, he's always
Otho. He's like the You know what he is? He's the male Edie McClurg.
Oh, interesting.
Okay.
Look up Edie McClurg.
I don't have my phone in front of me.
You remember Grace from Ferris Bueller, Mr. Rooney's secretary.
I haven't
seen Grace! Oh, that was loud.
That was very loud.
So, his sermon, he blames video games and MTV.
Well, yeah.
Because that's what he does.
That's what everything was blamed on.
And then we get these moments of prayer in front of Heather's body from bunches of people, mm-hmm. and they're all god-awful.
I did one of the, kind of problematic, but also true to character and funny moments, was the one guy that was like, "I can't believe she died before I got to bang her." And then apologizes. He's like, "Well, it's just a joke. Like, this is happening in his own head."
Yeah, yeah, in his conversation
where
with God.
He immediately apologizes. "What? It's just a joke."
And then we go outside, and Yellow Heather asks Veronica, "What are you doing tonight?" And she's like, "I don't know, mourning?"
Right?
And then we get the nerds getting beat up, or getting attacked by the jocks, and... I mean, there was some casual homophobia already in this movie, but, like, this moment was, like, super, like, "Say you like giant dick," and whatever, and...
Oh, that totally happened in high school in the 80s.
Sure, but I think, and obviously we're looking at it from the lens of the now versus the then, and that's hard. If the kid had just said, "Okay, fine, I like dick," and then moved on, then it would have just made the jocks look like huge homophobes, and it wouldn't make the movie as homophobic as it is at times.
But if that... I know, I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, and I guess I'm thinking about it, you know, having a very good memory of how things were in that, time.
Yeah, as a boy at that age.
Where, like...
Yeah.
If you... Whether you were or were not gay... The idea that anyone would admit it at that time.
Yes.
People are very much not out. You would do
anything.
Yeah.
You'd let them beat the fuck out of you if it meant that you wouldn't get called that. Yes. You're so scared of it.
Right. No, it's about saving face, but obviously as we look at it now, it's like, wow.
Yeah.
Also, like, it's not a big deal to just say words that don't have any real meaning. To you, you know?
But when you're that age, regardless of what it is, saying something that, like, is embarrassing means so much more when you're a teenager.
Oh, 100%. And so then, like, Heather wants Veronica to go on a double date with the jocks. And she's like, I just hope they don't take us cow tipping. And then, of course, what they took do? Them cow, they go tipping. Cow tipping.
Fun fact about cow tipping. you really can't fun tip fact. A cow.
They're very large, they're very heavy large. Animals.
You can't actually tip them over. If you try to go cow tipping, you'll probably just get hurt and run over by a cow.
Also, I feel like especially tipping, if
the cow has horns.
So that's a huge trope, like cow tipping. Oh, but, like, I've it's tried not to go a cow thing.
I feel like that it's a bit of a misnomer too, because you can't really, you don't see a teetering cow. Yeah. Like once they're tipped, they're down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's no in between.
And so they tip the cow somehow, and there's a big splatter of mud and covers the girls. And then
also might be shit.
Yeah, well, probably mixed with shit, yes. Dude still tries to sleep with Veronica, and he quotes sexual healing. And I'm like, this guy has never heard of Marvin Gaye.
He couldn't have heard the Soul Asylum version yet.
No.
It didn't come out yet.
I'm like, there's no way that this dumb fuck has ever listened to anything remotely sensual, let alone Marvin fucking
Gaye. He might have just been exposed to it
somewhere.
Yeah,
somebody might have played it, and if they asked him who it was, he'd probably be like, Lionel Richie?
Also, he would have been like, oh, who is that? And they're like, Marvin Gaye, and he's like, turn it off!
Gaye? Yeah. No!
No wonder I thought it was Lionel Richie.
What kind of sexual healing is this?
Well, luckily, Veronica hops the fence, and he is incapable of hopping the fence.
He's incapable of a lot of things. And, of course, Christian Slater's there waiting.
Of course he is. But, you know, we pan on Yellow Heather and her date lying on top of her as she's trying to fight him off.
Yeah.
And not succeeding. And again, Veronica completely ignoring it, doesn't seem to care, doesn't think anything of it.
What I say is that there's only two people that are redeemable in this movie. I have not mentioned Veronica because Veronica is not redeemable
in this
movie.
No, she's not. But that was when I messaged you guys. I was like, holy crap, I did not remember all of the just like casual SA in this. Because she was physically fighting him and nobody's paying attention.
Christian Slater wanted a slushie, and so they went to get a slushie instead.
Exactly.
Well, let me ask right now, I guess. Why do you think he's there?
Because he was jealous that Veronica was on a date.
But how does he know that?
Because
he watches her. He stalks her.
He's nuts.
See, I thought he was following the football players.
Oh, you think he was already planning on killing them?
Yes.
I mean, that's possible. Because he's fucking nuts.
And my thought is that if Veronica doesn't walk up that hill,
he kills all three of them?
He kills all four of them.
Good.
Oh. Well, he does say later that he was going to kill Veronica.
So
I guess I missed that.
Well, that's not where I pieced it together. That was just a thought I had. I was like, I'm because you could tell he identified them as targets. So it made me think, like, is he just out there figuring out where, like, oh, well, they're out in these woods now. It's pretty remote. That's a good spot.
And then we get this scene at the, like, the yearbook office. And they mention the song Teenage Suicide, Don't Do It. And, like, at first, because I had put together the band and the thing, and I'm like, is that an actual fucking song? Like, what?
It was a remix of Relax.
Don't do it. Yeah, Frankie says suicide, don't do it. Jeez. God.
It does take the Micro Machines guy to fit all those syllables in there, but...
Oh, my God. But we also get that they're putting the suicide note in the yearbook. I'm just, like, amazed at these people.
That actually sounds like something that would have happened in the 80s, though. I'm going to be real.
Fair enough. And then...
To me, it makes perfect sense it's obvious that no one at this school is particularly creative.
Well, apparently Kurt is, because he apparently got into real detail about what Veronica did in her mouth with Kurt and the other guy. And Ram. Kurt, the other guy's name's Ram.
Kurt.
Of course it is.
Ram.
Kurt and Ram. Ram. Well, neither of them was Chaz, so it had to be Ram.
Ram. It's like the fourth of the three ninjas.
Well, his cousin went to Bayside. Moose?
There you go.
I went with Three Ninjas. You went with Saved by the Bell.
They're the same.
Yep. Exactly the same. So immediately.
Well, Saved by the Bell originally did take place in Ohio.
That's true.
Indiana.
Good Morning, Miss Bliss. Oh, it was in Indiana.
It was in Indiana.
You're right.
Dave. I bet you a dollar.
Dave, how did you get that wrong?
I'm not convinced I have.
It's Indiana. I'm 90% sure she's right. And as soon as this happens, I'm like, okay, they're going to kill Kurt and Ram now. And they're sitting in the bed, and they're loading the guns. And he's like, oh, yeah, these are whatever German rounds that'll just break the skin.
Again, Veronica, she flat out says at one point, I'm a genius.
She did say that at one point. You're
I'm
right.
a genius. We talked about putting me in high school in the sixth grade, but decided against it because I'd have trouble making friends. And yet, she's an idiot.
She's so dumb.
She wears a rose-colored monocle.
She does when it comes to Christian Slater.
Rose-colored monocle. I like it. Yeah, and then they're like, well, she's like, well, how are we going to make them believe that they're gay lovers? And he's like, got a bag of, like, random, like, very, you know.
Well, there's some gay porn.
Some gay porn.
And chocolates.
I think mascara was one of the things that
mascara,
they put in there.
Mascara, and then he pulled out an eyebrow pencil.
Yeah.
But whatever.
Come on. I mean, J.D. Vance wears eyeliner.
No, but I feel like I recognize that particular, like, looking thing, and I'm pretty sure that was eyebrow pencil, not even eyeliner.
Was there a sex toy in there, the pocket couch?
There was no sex toy, but there was the bottle of mineral water. Yeah.
Which was actually, yes, the most unproblematic joke in the whole thing, where it's just like, well, mineral water, because only gay people drink mineral water.
Mineral water is so gay. I drink mineral water.
It's weird at that point, that's finally where I was like, I think JD's was a teen serial killer.
That's the point?
Yeah. Because like, he knows exactly how stupid everyone is. Like, he knows how they're going to respond to all this dumb shit. Because he's seen it before.
So,
I also did wonder if his dad wasn't gay and he killed
his wife because of that.
Yes. And that's why he had the easy access to the gay porn.
Oh.
I think he probably just bought it. But
or stole
at the
it.
Well, at
or
the convenience store yeah. Same as
in. So, yeah, then they
well, there was a whole conversation about the mineral water too. Like lots of people drink mineral water. Like who? I don't know.
Not in Ohio.
Not in Ohio. Which was actually kind of funny.
May as well. May as well something and wear a dress.
Yeah,
something
so
like that.
So she convinces the boys to come out to the woods for a real good old fashioned threesome. Like, I'll do all the things you said I did. Oh yeah, okay.
Also, this is the first time I'd ever heard the term sword fight.
Really?
Well, you were a kid then.
I was like 13.
Oh, I thought you meant now. I was like, what? Okay. When you watched it the first time, that's
yeah,
the first time
when
you
I was
okay.
13, that's
that
the first
makes
time
more
I
sense.
I was actually surprised at how forward-thinking for a movie from the 80s this was, with the idea of two guys using a mouth at the same time.
You know what this is? This is some.
That's
this,
not forward thinking. What are you talking about?
Well, I mean, because most, especially jocks, would be like, "Oh, we can't let them touch."
Oh, gotcha.
But it lives in this sort of like, uncomfortable balance.
It's in the neutral zone
of John Waters. This is the writer's name is Daniel Waters. Oddly, no relation. But like.
And Roger Waters?
No other Waters. But like Amy Heckerling.
God.
Like,
you know what though? If this movie had been written and directed by John Waters, it would be 90 times better.
But like he'd still probably be going to all these same places.
But he'd have so much more fun with it.
Right. That's
and
what I mean.
There'd be joy and there'd be like a strange, odd kind of humanity to it. It's like Serial Mom in that way. Serial Mom is a fucking psychotic movie, and because it's John Waters, it's like, wow, this movie's fun.
And there's whimsy.
Yeah.
Whereas this is not. It's weird that it's played. It's not played for laughs, but you're wanting laughs.
Right.
That's what I mean. Like, it's almost a dark comedy, but, like, it never crosses that threshold to comedy, or not even quite enough into the absurd.
It's a funnier movie in 1989.
Well, absolutely.
This is one of the, you mentioned it doesn't cross the line into the absurd, and that's how I felt this whole movie was. Like, you've taken us out of reality to a point that we don't feel for these people, but you haven't taken it to the extreme enough where we're like, oh, this is a big joke.
It's like we stopped at Quirk and didn't get it to the, we needed like a little Elijah Wood push or something.
Sure.
Like just
a little Wood push.
Just meaning like, cause he's so fucking weird.
Yeah. No, I get what you mean. So yeah, they end up in the woods. Christian Slater shoots. Yeah, on the Elijah Woods. Christian Slater shoots the one in the throat.
Yeah.
And somehow Veronica still doesn't get it. She misses the other guy. And he has to go chase the guy down. And they end up coming full circle back to where they started. And that's when she realizes the other guy's dead. That got shot in the throat.
I think she... Well, there's... Because, yeah, they both shoot. The one guy falls down. And Christian Slater's mad. He's like, you completely missed him. And she's like, that's fine. I'm sure it'll still... And then Christian Slater takes off. And that's when she starts to realize...
Yeah, but she doesn't...
Wait, are we actually going to kill these people?
I don't even think she's even starting to wonder until he's already gone.
But she doesn't even realize...
But that's what I mean. Like, once he's run off, that's when she finally looks down and figures it out. But it still takes
the amount of time for him to get back with the other guy. And then she has to kill the other guy.
Yeah.
And that's when it finally hits her. And yet then, because there's two stone cops outside the woods... Like, oh, did you hear that? They have to run off, and they make out in the car.
Which, weirdly enough, those two cops out there made me, again, think of the kids in the hall. Because they're those...
We get this... So the one guy stays with the dead body. The other guy chases the kids down and finds them in the car making out. And he calls back in the other guy, and he's like, yeah, just a couple kids making out. To which the other cop asks, are they naked?
Which, so, this is another thing that was, like, sort of there, but not quite explored, where they start making out just so that they're like, oh, we're just kids making out, like, that's why we're out
here. They stayed in that car all night, though.
But then, when the cop runs away, then there's a moment of looking at each other, and then they really start making out, like, this made me hot kind of thing. Which, of course, it did to Christian Slater, because he's a psycho. But Veronica, again... Just killed somebody. Completely unbothered by it for the most part.
Yeah. Literally, the Are They Naked line I wrote after that, I wrote, I swear this movie was written by a teenager. It just feels like this is like a teenager's like dream, like a school shooter's like dream movie.
I feel like this is sort of like if you moved... If you wrote like Scary Movie, and back in 1989, this is what it would be like.
Well, and then there's another.
Yeah, but we have that kind of a parody from the 80s. That kind of broad, big parody from the 80s. Yeah. It's called Spaceballs.
Mm-hmm. Or Naked Gun.
Yes, I mean
Airplane.
Yeah, I mean, so I mean, we had those kind of movies. I don't think this gets to that.
But it was just like, well, I'm gonna push the envelope a little bit, but with the very edge of my nail.
So
cop two comes back to cop one.
And they look at the bag.
Well, yeah, he's like, what do you think happened? He's like, it was definitely a suicide. He's like, do you really think so? And well, yeah, they were gay, clearly. Well, how do you know? And he picks up the bottle of mineral water.
And he says, oh, the humanity. So then we get the next morning. They wake up in the car in the parking lot of the school, and they're sitting there. And Winona, like, they both have a cigarette, but they're unlit. And Winona Ryder uses the car cigarette lighter, and she takes it out, and then she burns her hand. And he's like, "God!" He, like, knocks it out of her hand, and then lights his cigarette off of her charred hand.
This was the first.
I think that's the coolest thing I'd ever seen.
This was the first moment of Winona with Veronica's humanity, where she hurts herself because, like, of what she has done.
Yeah, because she's like, is this real?
Uh-huh. Okay, so...
I don't have my monocle. I thought this was a dream.
That was close to real for me, like, until he did the cigarette thing. So we get, actually, what I think might be the funniest moment in this movie coming up, and then the first very real moment that this movie has had this entire time, right afterwards. So we get the funeral for the two jocks, and they're being buried in their helmets.
With footballs.
With footballs, which made me laugh out loud. And then the dad saying, I love my dead gay son.
I love my dead gay son.
Which was hilarious as well. But then we get the shot of Winona Ryder and Christian Slater laughing, and the sister in tears turning and looking at her mm-hmm. and making eye contact with her. And I'm like,
yep.
That is the first real human moment in this entire movie.
Yep.
And it's one of the few times where I know we talked about this. I'm like, the actors are better than this movie. And you said, one of the writers acting in this movie wasn't that great. I'm like, there it was. When she saw the girl and connected with her, mm-hmm. there was a real moment for her. Like, you could feel that. It's too bad it didn't really make anything
much
better.
Much of a difference.
there's not much room to breathe in the movie. Everything is very it's very MTV generation.
Yeah, it's an hour 40 minutes, so it's not.
I do think that was because everything feels very. This movie watches like a first draft. Is the best way I can describe it.
Yeah, I can see that.
So that was literally the turning point, I think, where the little girl turned around and Veronica actually saw a real consequence of her actions, that this is affecting other people. Because that's when Veronica is kind of like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I can't be around him anymore. He makes me do terrible things. Yeah. And, like, she, you know, actually tries to become a friend. Like, there's a moment, I know I'm skipping ahead, but there's a moment of her being an actual friend to Yellow Veronica in the bathroom later. Yeah.
So, I don't know where this line came from, but I loved it. There was somebody talking about, like, terrible things, and I can't remember who it was. It might have been the principal.
I hope to God this is the same.
Sexually perverse photography exhibits featuring tennis rackets was the line that I wrote down, and I don't remember
that.
Yep. And I was like, wow.
Mine was, I don't patronize rabbits.
I think it might be from the same speech, but I don't remember.
I feel like it was a conversation that was going on outside after the funeral.
Maybe.
Or something like
that. Maybe that came from Otho. I can't remember. And literally at this point, I'm like,
And then there's also one word.
Oh, Eskimo later on?
Yeah.
Eskimo.
Dude, okay, so that speech, I wrote that somewhere. Oh, that's later, because it's in the dream.
That's Green Heather's funeral.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's later. So at this point, I feel for Green Heather, Betty, the fat girl, and the little girl at the funeral. Everyone else is such garbage at being human. And obviously, Green Heather very quickly falls from that list as we watch this movie. Christian Slater says the line Kiosk is great, and that pretty much sums up who he is as a human.
Mm-hmm.
We also found out that his father intentionally blows up buildings, which is cute.
Which is cute.
And then we finally get the song. We get a few moments of the song of Suicide, Don't Do It. Before, of course, Christian Slater shoots his radio with his gun. Because why wouldn't he?
Why wouldn't he?
And that's when she breaks up with him. Him shooting the radio is what sets her finally over the edge to break up with him.
She really likes that song.
Yeah, she's like, oh, you're a cool guy. You sit in your room and you shoot your radio and blah, 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 and I can't be with you. It doesn't say anything about how he murders people.
Yeah. It's like, oh, you kill people. To be fair, she's a murderer as well.
She's kind of in denial about it, though.
Yes.
I'm better than you. At least I don't shoot my radio.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because
what kind of animal does that?
She doesn't take accountability for Veronica, because she's like, technically I didn't kill her, because
you mean,
like,
Red Heather,
whatever, because he gave her the thing and I didn't know. And then the second one is, I didn't know they were real bullets. And he's like, really, you're gonna pretend that you didn't know?
She shot the second guy after figuring out that the first guy was dead. Uh-huh. So it's not, that's no excuse,
but she was still like in denial that she had anything to do with any of it.
So then we get Green Heather meeting with Christian Slater's character, and him blackmailing her with a photo of her and Dump Truck as when they were kids being friends.
Oh, no.
I know.
I feel like anybody who went to school with them, as someone who went to a school probably about that size in the Midwest,
you were friends with
everybody
people.
Already yeah. knew. We'd all known each other since kindergarten, right. So you drifted apart and you made your friend groups in high school, but like, it's not like people didn't know that they were friends when they were kids.
Right. So my note is great. He's turning Green Heather into a monster. How lovely.
Nature abhors a vacuum.
It's true. And that's kind of part of the point of this movie is that even if you kill off a Heather, a new Heather will come to be.
Will rise.
Hydra Heather.
How's that guilt settling in Veronica? I guess just she's finally starting to feel guilty about mm-hmm. her shit. And then, like, she has a scene with Betty, and I just put, Betty is too good for this world. And when I say this world, I mean the weird world this movie exists in.
Yep.
And then we get the other very real moment of this movie, which is Martha Dump Truck spilling her soda on her shirt, mm-hmm. and that being the last straw, and her walking into traffic.
Yep.
And I'm like, holy fuck.
Well, we kind of skipped over
the whole
suicide being trendy, which yes. No one has actually committed suicide at this point. No. But they have set it up so that the whole school thinks that they have. And Veronica actually talks about how, you know, suicide gave Heather a heart. It made, you know, the other two seem intelligent to have this, to have that. Right. So, like, it gave them a purpose or whatever. So I think Martha sees this.
Oh, I think Martha's actually, and suicide is a complicated topic, and there are many different views on suicide and where it falls, but I think Martha's suicide attempt was a legitimate suicide attempt. I don't think it was her trying to be cool.
She's probably already on the edge, but I think that probably was like the final straw was literally like, well, everybody that has been doing this is remembered kindly, even though they weren't kind people, so perhaps I will be remembered. I don't know.
I actually just like the fact that the final straw is her spilling her drink on herself.
There's a seven element where all of these murders were sort of tailored to offenses.
Mm-hmm.
And what gets her is that finally someone who she can say is innocent
mm-hmm.
is, you know, harmed in all of this. And even though she's not directly responsible, she feels responsible.
Thank God Martha Dump Truck survives.
Yep.
Like, that would have been the final nail in the coffin. I'd be giving this movie a zero if she had died. Honest to God. And then, like, my notes are like, Green Heather's fall from grace is wild. Like, she fully turns into Red Heather and, like,
goes into her locker, takes her scrunchie, right. And she's laughing about Martha. That's another moment where Veronica's like, what the hell is wrong with you?
She early movie Green Heather would not have laughed at Martha that way.
No, but she just acted out her real life arc on Charmed in the course of a third act.
In the course of 2 seconds, she turned from green to red.
Uh-huh.
As soon as she put in the headband or the whatever.
The red scrunchie.
The red scrunchie.
We get the scene where they're listening to the radio and Yellow Heather gets onto the call for Hot Probs. The name of the radio show is Hot Probs. And she calls in and she's terrible at being anonymous.
Yeah.
My name's Heather. Madonna. It's Tweety.
Oh my God.
And Veronica and Heather, of course, are listening. And they both, like, Veronica, she's like, she knows we listen to this.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to hear this.
Right. And so we get this petition thing going on to get the band to come play prom. And everybody signs it except for Veronica. Veronica's like, I'm not signing your fucking sheet.
Well, also, the next day at school,
mm-hmm.
Heather tells everyone about Heather's phone call.
Yes, and then Heather tries to kill herself.
Then Heather goes to the bath. That's when we get the moment where Veronica, like, realizes, like, she runs out, and she's like, oh crap.
Yeah. And then Heather has the line, are you trying to kill me? No, you're trying to kill you. Are you trying to go to sleep?
That's what, yeah, she's like, are you trying to go to sleep? And then they actually have a moment of actual, genuine, human connection and kindness. And Heather, still, we're still ignoring all of the sexual assault, because she's like, the last guy I slept with doesn't say he raped me. She says he killed himself. That's what she's thinking about.
Yeah.
So she probably doesn't even know.
Yeah. And so it turns out, like, with this whole turning Green Heather red and the petition thing, is Christian Slater's just setting up his next murder, which we think is Green Heather. And then we have this, which turns out to be a dream.
I totally missed that it was a dream, and I was very confused in the last scene.
So we get him waking her up in the middle of the night, them going to Green Heather's, him pulling out a knife, her going, that knife is filthy. And he's like, so? And he's like, she's like, Green Heather would never slit her own wrists with a dirty knife. He writes, life sucks, as the suicide note in terrible handwriting. He goes, it's perfect, though.
Well, he says no one cares what the note actually says. Yes.
That's probably the part that makes it the more believable than a dream.
Yeah. And so then they've got dead Green Heather, and he's like underlining things in Moby Dick. And he's just like, oh, yeah, Eskimo. We'll just underline the word Eskimo. It sounds like whatever. And then we get the funeral where everyone's wearing 3D glasses. And I literally put, why are they all wearing 3D glasses? Is this finally a dream? And then Otho says, he's like, Eskimo, her soul was in Antarctica. And I'm like, do you mean Alaska? I'm like, what? And then, yeah, we have the return of Red Heather as, like, kind of one of Scrooge's ghosts, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when she wakes back up, and I'm like, okay, so it was a dream.
Yeah, I missed the waking back up. Yeah. I saw literally everything else.
And then she starts writing in her diary again what feels like a suicide note.
Well.
And then, yeah, and then she fake hangs herself, and I knew she fake hung herself.
I did too.
Yeah. But Christian Slater comes in, and he literally says, I was coming here to kill you.
Yeah.
And he goes into his whole plan about blowing up the school and the fake petition, which is actually the petition of, we the school are going to kill blow ourselves up. And I'm like, what the fuck? And he goes, we could have toasted marshmallows together. And I'm like, dude.
Well, he does say that he loved her.
Yeah.
Like, I love you.
In the way a psychopath thinks that they're in love with somebody.
Oh, yes, for sure.
So then Mom comes in because she still hasn't come down for spaghetti. And she just sees her daughter hanging there.
I felt really bad for
until
Mom.
She started talking?
What? No, just still. Like, not even. It was, what do you say? She's like, I would have let you, like. She's obviously upset. Yeah. She's rambling. They didn't go hyper real with it like what a mother would actually do. As someone whose mother did think that she found me dead because I slipped under the water of a bathtub one time just to relax and didn't hear my mom knocking on the door, and she opened the door and thought I had drowned. The panic that a mother will do when she thinks she's found her daughter like that. This was definitely under that.
So, well, then we get Winona Ryder's reaction to her mom finding her, which is, hey, Mom, why so tense?
Right? And, like, her mom's just like, oh, and then they just cut away. I'm like, okay.
And then
you just traumatized your mother.
I think we get the teachers talking again or something, because I'm pretty sure it's the hippie teacher that says this line. And I'm like, this is a line and a half. Whether to kill yourself or not is one of the most important decisions a teenager can make. And I'm like, wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, because Veronica shows up to school and hippie teacher
is like...
Oh,
she thought
she
was dead.
She's like, he told me that you killed yourself last night.
Hi, Veronica, I thought you were dead.
Well, she's like, Dean said that you killed yourself last night.
Right, but she's so nonchalant about it.
And she's like, no, and she's like, oh, well, and that's when she says that line.
Yeah. Also, then we get this whole end game of this movie. And my first thought is, as she's trying to find the bomb and find Christian Slater, is why did she not think to call the police about the bomb?
Because she's a genius.
Because this time, it's personal.
And then she asks, what's underneath the gym? And I'm like, the boiler. And they're like, the boiler? I'm like, oh, no shit.
Can we talk for a minute?
Freddy Krueger.
About
Freddy Krueger.
But about that, she asks, I think recurring character, side character kid, what's under the gym? And he doesn't just say the boiler. He's like, the boiler. It's like, what the hell was that?
He's like, I know what's going on.
What?
Oh my god. She does a really terrible job of stopping him. We get a shot of this stoner lighting a match to light up a joint right next to the bomb under the bleachers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, do you just not see that? How do you not just see that?
Nope, she doesn't see it.
She, as she's searching for him in the boiler room, she walks by the bomb and doesn't stop. Because she's more focused on finding him than stopping the bomb.
She's a genius.
Yep.
Also, I don't think she actually... I think finding him to her actually is primary.
Yeah, she's not trying to save...
I asked, that's what I mean. I like, it's not that she...
She's no hero in this movie.
Right.
She is no hero in this movie. She does shoot his middle finger off, which is awesome. And then he picks up the dirtiest fucking towel and uses it as a bandage. I'm like, that is...
An infection waiting to happen.
Yeah, that's sepsis right there. And then his villain speech kind of sucks. I'm not going to lie. It's a bunch of words that really have not enough meaning.
Well, I almost...
Maybe that was the point.
Yeah, I actually feel like that was intentional, where it's like...
There's no brand design for this. You're just an idiot.
He looks at himself as being this... intellectual superior to everybody, but even if he actually believes any of this, which I think is dubious at best, it seems like just a speech he's rehearsed.
Yeah, it does. And somehow his knife stops the bomb.
Yeah, because that's how bombs work.
Maybe
it went through the appropriate wire.
Well, to be fair, his dad's usually the one who blows the stuff up.
So then she leaves the school. She looks like complete ass. Mm-hmm. Walks out. He shows up again because somehow he's still alive after she shoots him. And he shows that he's got six full sticks of dynamite strapped to his chest.
Well, you gotta.
He's got a six pack.
And then he blows himself up.
Well, she's standing like 30 feet away.
That would have not only blown him up, it would have blown her up, it would have blown out all the windows on that school. Like, that amount of dynamite.
I was waiting for, like, Christian Slater body parts to fly through the windows at the pep rally or something.
And then we get the shot of her just, like, ashen with a cigarette lit. And I'm like, this is such a dumb fucking... This was supposed to be cool.
It could have been cool had his arm flown over, been on fire, she picks up the arm to light her own cigarette this time.
Look, six sticks of dynamite does about as much damage to a school as a burning garbage can does to a frat
house.
But
think of that symmetry.
No,
you're right, Dave.
Thank you.
Nick just can't get past how much dynamite there was and that it
six
did.
Full sticks.
This is, again, inconsequential, apparently.
Again, you're counting on him knowing what he's doing.
No, I'm counting on physics to be real in this movie.
And that any of that is real. For all we know, only one of them is real.
Well, I don't know if anything in this movie is real. And then we get, like, Veronica being nice to Dump Truck all of a sudden. And I'm like, this doesn't, like, is this supposed to be redemption for her? Because she's not redeemable. I'm sorry. I don't feel better about her for being nice to her. My date
for the prom, petered out, like, blew me off or something. I can't remember what she says.
I don't think it's, like, as simple as...
It feels like it's supposed to be, though.
Well, I also don't think that the story's meant to continue. It just, you just leave it at the character can have an upward trajectory. But no, redeemed? No. It's a movie.
And but even it at the end where she's like, she's nice to Martha, like, let's hang out on prom night. And Martha's like, that'd be really great. Like, that's lovely.
But she then, also becomes the Red Heather.
As she's walking away, Martha is just buzzing around her in her wheelchair. I'm poor like, Martha. What is this?
Poor Martha.
Martha so, deserved a real friend.
Yes. Betty and Martha should have been the only people to survive that explosion, and then I would have been happy.
Oh, so it should have been like Carrie.
To be fair, do we yes. know if anyone
that
else...
That would have been better.
Do we know if anyone else did?
Yes, because they were all sitting in the gym and were like, what was that when the explosion
happened? Yeah, the explosion happened. Right. They're all like, that was weird.
Huh? Something went bang outside. Probably six sticks of dynamite. I'm sure it didn't damage the building at all. So...
Wow.
Completely off topic, though. Everybody, the fact that everybody died at the end of Carrie, like, there were some characters that shouldn't have.
Yes, but you feel for but that's what so makes much
it,
more than these
But that's
characters.
What
yes.
makes it tragic.
Yeah, yeah.
If only the bad people died,
I mean,
you'd have
look,
Dexter.
That whole Carrie...
Until season three.
If people were just nicer when she got her first period, the whole movie would have been so much better.
Mm-hmm.
I mean...
like, it would have been a happier story.
It would, except for, you know, the having, you know, her having to go home part.
Yeah, her mom.
Yeah, her mother was...
Sorry, I didn't want to open up a new can of worms. Yeah. Let's get back to Heather's.
Also, the book is fantastic, too. If you
haven't I've not read the book.
It's fantastic. Okay, so final thoughts, because the movie's over now. my final thoughts were...
The movie's been over for me for like a month.
Fair enough. So here are my notes about the movie as
okay.
a whole.
You keep saying it.
I'm conflicted. Thank you. So here are my notes about this movie as a whole. God. I'm conflicted by this movie. It rings so hollow with broad brushstrokes and caricature characters, but there are a couple of real moments that if you blink, you miss them. And there's some fantastic dialogue in this film. And why do almost all 80s teenage protagonists come from privilege? I mentioned that. It really does feel like a teenager wrote this. It's too cavalier about suicide. The characters' personalities swing too far, and you don't feel for anyone but the minor characters. The actors, like I said, the actors in this are better than the film. If somehow JD had accomplished his goal of killing the whole school, I would only have felt for two people, Betty and Martha, and they are both barely in the movie. I also think the second half is far better than the first, but that doesn't mean that much to me.
Fair enough.
Other final thoughts? I know you both have seen this movie before.
Yeah, there are definitely some things I didn't notice before. Like, for whatever reason, it didn't dawn on me that JD was possibly a serial killer. And it did make... I found myself a lot more curious about what about his dad
in this movie
time.
Make him a serial killer.
No, I mean, like with a track record.
Yeah. No,
he was a serial killer when he got to the high school.
Right. I guess the only thing that threw me off was that he's there at the end and dies. But then I thought, well, that wasn't his intention, though. He probably had his dad was probably ready to move on to some other town.
Yeah.
And
weird how these schools keep blowing up right before we move.
Yeah, and I'm always missing a bunch of dynamites.
Like six sticks every time.
Way more than that.
Yeah, there was a bunch of dynamite in that building.
Yeah.
I wonder if they ever found the dynamite. Probably not.
They're probably using it in stage productions.
There you go.
Not, yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a movie I used to like a lot more.
Fair enough.
And the more I've thought about it, I'm like, eh, you know, it's just... It does feel
like there's wasted potential in this movie.
Yeah. They were going for dark Fast Times and...
I don't like Fast Times.
I didn't really either. But in that, Fast Times was dark.
But yeah. But in that they're like, like it seemed like there was a lot of emphasis on trying to... get certain things into, you know, vernacular,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of like it. Well, that, I mean, this, you don't have Mean Girls without this movie.
I think if we're talking about Mean Girl movies, Mean Girls is the far superior.
Mean
movie.
Girls is far superior to this movie.
I'm just saying this basically told you how to do it.
Yeah.
This walks so Mean
Girls.
The first draft, like I said, this movie watches like a first draft.
And I haven't seen the new Mean Girls, but I'm willing
to bet. I heard it wasn't great.
But I'm willing to bet it blows because there's probably things from 2004 that you can't do now either.
Even Tina Fey says there's problematic stuff in the movie. She's like, if I made it again, I wouldn't have this, this, or this.
Okay, well, you can't.
Right.
The movies happen when they happened.
Yes.
100%. The world existed as it did then.
Mineral water and all.
Yeah. Personally, I don't like mineral water, but I do like sparkling water.
I like both.
They're kind of the same.
Mineral water, no. Mineral water, it there's barely bubbles.
It's the minerals.
The minerals don't add anything to me. But anyway.
You're only kind of gay, Dave, then.
Whatever. I like what I like. Dumb. But yeah, I think that I definitely was prepared to grade this a lot higher before we watched it.
I remember you being kind of excited that I chose this.
And now, but it's weird hearing that you're the one who chose it, and you're like, so.
So I chose it. I had not seen it probably in almost 20 years. Maybe like 15. I was probably in my late 20s when I watched it. And I remember watching it, knowing it was a cult classic, and like a lot of my friend group really liked it. So I watched it, and I remember not being completely enamored with it, but I didn't remember why. So I kind of picked it again for the same reason that I watched it the first time, that it was on the list because Nick had never seen it, that it was a cult classic.
That's the reason you watched it the first time?
That kind of went through, you know, followed the format of this podcast. And I'm like, maybe I'll appreciate it more this time. And yeah, I think I don't remember what fell flat for me the first time. I really do think it was that I didn't sympathize with Veronica at all.
Yeah,
I was like, she's not a good person. So yeah, I don't know. It kind of fell flat for me again. I think it had a lot of potential. I think it watched, like, I said it five times already, but watched like a first draft. It didn't quite get there. It didn't quite cross the line into absurd or satire.
It didn't cross the idiocracy hump. It doesn't get to that level that Mike Judge movies can get to.
Well, yeah. You know what it is?
It needed to be done more intelligently or more stupidly.
It was one of the two. It was done fairly cartoonishly.
But not cartoonishly enough.
Well, that's the thing. Selectively.
It took itself too seriously.
It's in no man's land.
You do things that have no tether to anything else. You're trying to show so many different quote unquote realities with so many different ways of shooting things. Like all of a sudden we're fucking Lemony Snicket.
They really did try a lot of camera angles, like one minute
Barry Levinson's directing and the next.
Oh, I wish Barry Levinson.
I mean, the first scene with the Heathers
like Barry Levinson
and playing the music, and like it was that like Vaseline on the lens, like very shiny, heavenly, da da da, until Winona Ryder was in the hole, and then she's on the stairs, and now we're in reality, I guess. But
so when I was 13 and got to watch this at like the most base level, you know, where I didn't know anything about film or what, I could go in and just take a story at just
where you could just watch a movie like my husband still watches movies.
So
face value, no thought.
I feel like we're all kind of circle around the same person being at fault for this movie not being as good as it could be, and that's the writer.
Yeah.
Daniel Waters.
And the director.
Yeah, but and I just want to go over Daniel Waters' other writing credits.
Mm-hmm.
So he did Heathers. Before that, he only wrote one other thing, a very nice TV show, or no, Beyond Our Control, which I don't know. Right after Heathers, he wrote The Adventures of Ford Fairlane.
Oh,
never heard of it.
That is the first and death knell of the career of or film career of Andrew Dice Clay.
Oh, wait for the next one, Hudson Hawk.
Oh, never seen it. No, you know what? I've gone through this list before. Sadly,
it's bad. Yeah, then Batman Returns. Then
not good.
Then I will say so bad it's good. Demolition Man.
Demolition Man was fun. I enjoyed Demolition Man.
If you don't have Wesley Snipes in Demolition Man, it sucks.
Demolition Man did the good job at crossing that line into the absurd.
Because making Taco Bell the only restaurant is pretty insane.
So Demolition Man did it right. Really significant after where that. It was serious but ridiculous, but it did a good job at
right. It crossed it. Over into the right area. Yeah, like I said, so bad it's good. Demolition Man. So yeah, I'm pretty sure the writer was the big problem with this movie. Did anybody else have any other final thoughts before we get into our two regular closing segments?
I don't think so. I apologize for anyone that goes to watch. Well, you should know now because we already talked about it, but like anybody that watches this and gets triggered because they were like, yeah, people said this movie was really cool.
It can be and very now I'm triggering. Upset. Yeah. I mean, and I'm somebody...
That sounded insincere when I said it, but I mean it.
I am somebody who can get triggered sometimes about some stuff. Like, if you listen to our old podcast, Bandersnatch really triggered me.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I don't get triggered by film. I get triggered by... politicians.
Yeah. Politicians. Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough. I think we all get triggered by politicians at this point. So
I just let the art be what it is. The person who makes the art might trigger me, but
I have a.
But if it exists in the fictional world, I can be like.
I'm usually good at that, but once in a while, some things like suicide. Well, certain
things are hard. Like the first time I watched Last House on the Left, I was like, all right, this is too close. And now I kind of go back and watch that just to get. Close to that right. really uneasiness.
Right. I mean, like, I'm one of those people that couldn't keep watching Handmaid's Tale after the first episode. Like, I'm like, I just, this is
to
not
be fair,
be
I couldn't watch
it
after the first season just because I was like, I'll just wait for the real life version.
That was the hard part. So, let's go into lighter fare here. Favorite weirdo. I feel like we might all have the same favorite weirdo, but
I since you guys are all going to pick the other... I had two, but one of them is going to be the one we all pick.
Probably.
So I'm going to go
now
with...
Now
I'm
going to pick somebody different.
You're not going to remember anyone else. I don't... Did I get his name? Because I did look up his name. the Hot Probs DJ.
Hot Probs DJ.
James Poor Man Trenton.
Hey, I need a name. Probs. Tweety.
Amanda.
I mean, I'm going to go with Martha because she's delightful.
Oh,
is that not what everybody else is going to
pick? I thought we were all going to go with Reverend Otho.
I did too.
I'm going with Reverend Otho.
Nope, Martha.
I think Martha's a weirdo. I just think she's a person.
Yeah, but she is a weirdo.
She's an outcast.
Other than the fact that her nickname is Dump Truck.
Which I'm sure is a nickname she did not get for herself. unless she got jumped into a time machine and went up like a couple decades later and we're like, oh, look at that dump truck.
Or she's like, you know what? I know I'm big. I'm going to own this.
Check out
you call
this
dump truck. Dump truck.
She's got a fair amount of weird moments Martha. In this that have nothing to do with...
But I feel like you could do that
like
with anyone.
Like when she just
anyone.
Gets
yeah.
under the table at one point, she's just like... I'm out. I'm just going to get it.
The only
table.
Thing that makes her odd is that she's basically mute.
Yeah.
Okay, whatever. I'm still picking her. She's my favorite.
All right,
okay.
Fine.
I mean, I
don't care if she's weird enough for you.
She was wearing my favorite t-shirt of all time, so there's that.
Yeah.
Oh, Martha. I love her. Cool. So we all picked different weirdos.
There
you
go.
So make it official. I know you sort of got...
Reverend Otho, yeah. Or I think his actual character name is Reverend Ripper.
Yeah, that's what it said.
Which is wild.
Sure.
I like the fact that his real name, I looked this up too, Glenn Shadix.
Nice.
S-H-A-D-I-X.
R.I.P. because I'm pretty sure he's
He died in 2010.
That's what I thought.
That sucks.
And you know what? I didn't see it in there, but I feel like he would have been awesome with an extended run on Designing Women.
Yes.
He and Anthony could have been besties.
Holy shit. And just, great. Just slapping Delta Burke around.
I mean, yep. That's going to be one of the sad things
Battle
about watching
of their chins.
Beetlejuice is that there's no Otho.
No. Nope.
But I hear that it's been getting rave reviews.
It looks like it's going to be very good.
I am oddly excited for this.
This is like the first time I've gotten excited by anything Tim Burton in a long time.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. So let's score Heathers. You want me to go first since I watched it?
Sure.
Go first.
I gave it 6 red vines, and I chose red vines because they look like they're delicious, but they're hollow inside, and there's really not much there.
Yeah, they really are disappointing.
Yeah, and I don't know why people choose red vines over Twizzlers, but they do.
I don't know why either. Oh,
I don't like
I
either.
I knew what I was going to rate Fair it, enough. But I didn't think of a candy. So.
Yeah, I didn't either.
What the hell? Have you guys not done this podcast before?
Never.
been a month.
It's been a while. It's
been like 6 weeks.
All right. I'm going to go 6 also. Milk duds, because duds.
Because duds.
Because duds. Because this movie was kind of a dud.
All right. I'm going to go with...
Oh, I thought you were trying to average our scores.
No, like average, like what I would have given this when I first saw it versus what I feel like I, because I feel like it to grade it based on my lens of today is not 100% fair.
I mean, and also I think as someone who has had movies that we've watched that others didn't like as much, I think the nostalgia factor does matter when it comes to giving a score.
For sure.
So I'll probably give it in the 6¾ Whoppers.
Oh.
Because Whoppers taste just as good as croquet balls.
I like Whoppers.
I like Whoppers.
And one of the things, so there's a local frozen custard place where I live, and they put Whoppers
in the bottom. Yeah, because I like the malted flavor.
A bottom of their waffle cones to stop the ice cream from leaking out the bottom of the waffle cone. Real good choice.
And I like malts. Like, I like malt in my ice cream.
Yeah, well, I do too. Like a chocolate malt.
Chocolate's pretty much it. Like, I don't really want any other malt.
Strawberry malt would be weird.
Yeah.
I've had a strawberry malt.
Yeah?
I've had peanut butter malt.
See, I think a peanut butter malt could
work. I smoked a cherry malt on the way over.
Awesome. Hey, what are we picking next on that note?
So that was Heather's. We all scored it in the sixes because... Well, that's others.
Yep.
I would have given it like a 7.5 at the beginning, but I kind of just thought, as we're going through it, I'm like, yeah.
The yuckiness grew on you.
Yeah, I think a little bit.
that was kind of rinse
my mouth out with some mineral water.
And it was like disappointment in myself for not noticing some of the obvious sexual assault going on in the upper right corner of the screen.
I mean, it's not as obvious as Revenge of the Nerds, but it's pretty obvious.
Oh God, Revenge of the Nerds. I can still enjoy that movie, but that is...
You can?
I would rather watch...
So problematic.
I would have rather watched Revenge of the Nerds 2 even before I realized how problematic the first one was.
I was going to give it away in a...
Oh, don't give it away.
But there's our next thumbnail.
Is it Trainspotting?
It is!
Because, you know, I knew there was a train in the photo.
And also, there's a little guy back there...
Wait, Nick, have you not seen Trainspotting?
I have never seen Trainspotting.
Why is it always Nick?
You guys like the
Because
pick
Nick
on me.
Never sees anything good. That's
I've
why.
Seen loads of great movies. Neither of you had seen Nebraska, and that was a really good movie.
It was a really good movie.
Yeah.
Trainspotting? It's going to be interesting rewatching this for me because I also haven't seen this since my late 20s. And I was all my guy friends that wanted to watch it, and I had mixed feelings about it then. Look, so I'll see how I feel about it now.
I just don't know if I can watch Obi-Wan Kenobi pre-Obi-Wan Kenobi.
It's been a while since we had a foreign language film.
Look, I've seen pretty much all of Guy Ritchie's movies. I think I can handle the speaking in Trainspotting.
Oh, sir.
Is it that bad? Do I have to turn on the subtitles?
This is not that.
Even... Brad Pitt's terrible accent in Snatch?
It was about on par with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nah, here's what helps. Looking through one of the books and try and get it, like, understand it phonetically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because the books are written phonetically.
And
with the dialect.
You know what? I think I actually have a little glossary that I could send you.
As someone who listens to books as audiobooks, that'll totally work for me.
So, I think when you watch, even if you can't understand the dialogue, like, the whole, everything, there's so many visuals in this, like, you'll get the gist of it.
It's kind of...
It's very dark,
Well, it's kind of like,
oh, good.
You know,
we need something, dark. We needed something dark after this.
We've had stuff that's, like, real, you know, cool visually, like, we've had...
Parasite.
Sometimes very weird things. This is the first time where we're sort of full raving it.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yep.
It's just going to be, it's more of an assault.
So should I pick, I get the next pick, should I just pick something I haven't seen as well? So we can just keep going on that list?
Next, having his first time.
Maybe we just change the name of the podcast to Nick's the Film
first
Virgin.
Time.
Nick's first. Just like
we
Nick's
might
first
get more listeners if we just call it Nick's first time.
Can we just call it Just Like Nick's First Time?
Oh,
so we're gonna watch Trainspotting next.
So we're gonna watch Trainspotting.
Is that streaming somewhere that we know of?
Probably
for sure?
Not. I can look right now.
Oh God.
So as we speak,
if I had to guess, it would be Max or Tubi or both.
I could see it on either of those. Trainspotting is on. Oh, it's on Prime.
Okay. Yeah, I always try to check to make sure stuff is actually streaming.
Fubo.
Before I choose.
Not Fubar, but Fubo.
Well, thank you guys for listening to this podcast.
Thank you so much.
Go to the place where you review the
podcast. Oh, yeah, yeah. You should give us a rating and review. Sorry, it's been like a month. Where you can rate and review us on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcast. We really appreciate that. Also, tell other people that this podcast exists, you know, because right now it's just you listening to us.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Also, if you have any comments or you want to share thoughts on this movie or Trainspotting, if you share them. Yeah,
or suggestions.
Or suggestions. If you share them, we will share them on the podcast. You can share with us on Facebook. Films Like the First Time is the name of the Facebook page. Or you can email us at memoriamdevelopment@gmail.com.
Woohoo!
But yes, thank you so much for listening. I'm Nick.
I'm Amanda.
I'm Dave.
Bye.
Bye.
Memoriam Development.